This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast, part of the Seneca Network from SUP China. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I'm your host, Jared Turner, longtime resident of China, co-founder of the Mandarin Companion Graded Reader Series, and my New Year's resolution is to be more punctual. My co-host is John Past, co-founder of Mandarin Companion, founder of All Set Learning, Chinese Grammar Wiki, Sinosplice.com, and while his computer beat him at chess, it was no match for him at kickboxing. In this episode, John and I will talk about flashcards and spaced repetition software, how they can help, their limits, and how to use it to build your Chinese skills. Guest interview was with Mandarin Blueprint co-founder Luke Neal, who felt the call of Chinese pulling him back to China, changing his life forever. All this and more, let's get to it. Hey guys, this is Jared Turner coming at you from Utah in the United States.
Hey guys, I'm John Pazden. I am in Shanghai, China. How's it going?
All right, John, this is a special episode for us. Do you know why?
I think I do.
All right, John, it's our two-year anniversary. That's right. 2 years ago, we started this podcast.
It's the episode where Jared gets overly sentimental about podcast milestones.
This is like our podcast's all grown up and saving China or saving Chinese or something. I don't know.
Yeah, so one podcast every 2 weeks and 50-something episode checks out. All right. Yay.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, we appreciate everyone who's been along with us this far, and so we'll look forward to another couple of years. But before we kick into things today, we do have a review to read. This comes from Alex Exner. He says, "Dear Jared and John, my name is Alex. I'm from Germany. About 2-3 months ago, I've stumbled upon your podcast and suddenly have started to binge listen to a lot of your episodes. I very much enjoy your content and feel you give some very new perspectives and valuable insights into learning Chinese combined with great humor. Haha. Keep up the good work. You guys are stressing the importance of seeing characters in different contexts to get an in-depth understanding has been a great tip. I've since read your book, Great Expectations, and have been sucked into the story. Furthermore, your podcast has gotten me to narrow down what my motivation is. My next step will be to study at a university in Shanghai starting in spring of 2021 and to pass HSK5 in order to participate in a Chinese-taught bachelor program in Shanghai. But I have two questions. First question, how do I best know how good my Chinese is and find out what my weaknesses are? And then two, what tips do you have to best leverage the opportunity to learn Chinese as a student studying in China? I very much look forward to hearing from you guys. Should you have any thoughts or opinions, you guys rock. Kind regards, Alexander Exner." All right, Alex, hey, appreciate that. John, he had some good questions there. So you want to hit that first one?
Okay, so how do you best know how good your Chinese is and what your weaknesses are? If you're kind of a beginner, this should be pretty obvious because when you try to talk to someone, it's just, there's a train wreck every single time.
Amen.
And that's normal. You'll find that your pronunciation is not good. You'll find that you don't know how to say what you want to say. All kinds of things like that. And that's totally normal. I feel like all those problems, like, you're not going to have to look too hard to find them. What can be harder is when you're already at the intermediate level or above and you're not sure where your problems are because everyone keeps telling you how good your Chinese is.
Yeah, it's kind of like the intermediate plateau, right?
Right. And in that case, it's helpful to find a good teacher who's just not all about nonstop praise. But it sounds like you're in the former category, so I wouldn't worry too much about that yet. So what you want to do is just get out there and practice your Chinese. And when people don't understand you, make notes on that. Repeat what you're saying. Some people will correct you. Some won't. And you should be able to pretty quickly zero in on like which pronunciation issues you're struggling with, which tones you're struggling with. I do recommend you check out the Chinese Pronunciation Wiki by All Set Learning. That'll help. And just lots of practice. Focus on pronunciation in the beginning.
Yeah. And on that note too, Alex, a lot of people are going to compliment your Chinese, but, don't inhale it, right? Just, you can appreciate it, but don't so focus on that. As John was mentioning, you're having that trouble. Focus, where people aren't understanding you or where you're having difficulties. And if you do take note on that and you pay attention to that, that does expose your weaknesses, but that's a great opportunity for you to focus and improve those.
Yeah. And if you haven't come to China yet, I think this will all be made very clear very soon. So don't worry.
Which is to his second question about, how do you leverage the opportunity about learning Chinese as a student studying in China? Well, we talk to people all the time on this podcast, who've had the opportunity to go to China, and that is an amazing opportunity. My biggest recommendation on this is make sure you're not hanging around other expats all the time. So go out there and you need to try to like make some Chinese friends, get into other, and it, that also can be a bit of a challenge if you're at a university in China, because all the other people at the university your age, they speak English, at least to some degree, and many are going to want to practice their English. So you need to look for some, the best is trying to make some friends or being insistent on trying to speak Chinese to other Chinese people, and make sure you get out of that expat bubble.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Jared was saying. I would say the challenges are two types. There's the extrovert challenge and the introvert challenge. So the extrovert challenge is just wanting to socialize a lot, and it's easier to socialize with people that speak fluent English or whatever your language is. And so, yeah, the challenge is to speak Chinese and not English and not get in that expat bubble or foreign student bubble. And then the introvert challenge is, it might be tempting to just kind of stay home and study and like really practice so that your Chinese can be perfect so you can go out there and use it. But, I got bad news for you. Your Chinese is never going to be perfect. You got to get out and practice, and there's no substitute for that. And if you're in China and you're not going to be here forever, then you really need to make the most of that practice time. And, of course, you got to study some, but don't overdo it.
Oh, and a little quick trick for you, Alex, since you are German and you're from Germany, if someone's speaking English to you, you could reply and just say, I'm from Germany. you could kind of feign that, you don't have to say I don't speak English, be like, I'm from Germany. And they may like, I speak German. And they'll be like, oh, okay, this might go to Chinese. So you could try that.
You're talking about shunning expats, or are you talking about getting Chinese people to speak Chinese?
Getting Chinese people to speak Chinese to you, especially at a university.
I should say there are a fair amount of Chinese people that speak German now. So, it doesn't always work. But anyway. Okay, so next up, we have a topic suggested by our friend Paul Holt. And this topic is about SRS, which is short for Spaced Repetition System or Spaced Repetition Software, which is usually described as intelligent flashcards. It's a kind of software. You know what we're talking about, right, Jared?
Oh, yeah. If any of you have used these flashcard programs, it's going to, have some sort of flashcard list, and you're trying to guess what the character is. If you get it right, you mark yes, or maybe it was no, I marked it wrong, or maybe it was a bit mushy on it, and it tries, recycle those things that you aren't so clear on, or ones you didn't know. It'll bring those up more frequently to give you opportunities to review those.
Right. So the idea is the more practice you need in order to remember it, the more you'll see it as you review the words in your flashcards program. So the programs, like the original was called Super Memo. They came up with this great algorithm for spacing out the repetitions you need for your flashcards. One of the most popular ones now is Anki. And if you use Pleco, the Chinese dictionary app we always recommend, it also has an SRS option built into its flashcard system.
Yeah, so there are a whole lot of them out there. And Anki is, I guess, as John mentioned, is one of the most popular out there, and it's very robust. But you can go out there, there's a tons of them. And I'm sure many listeners here maybe haven't heard these ones that we're mentioning. You have no ones of your own that maybe other people don't know about.
Yeah, so the suggestion was kind of like, you guys should tell people about spaced repetition. A lot of people don't know, and it's so awesome. And this is true. It is something awesome. We want to share it. But I also want to share that there are pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to kind of tell you about it, tell you what it is, tell you why it's so great, but then also tell you why it might not be for you, or you might have to be careful not to go overboard on it.
And so specifically, I just want to make the point for all of our listeners here that SRS, or spaced repetition, is just mainly a way to present flashcards. So you could think of SRS as like, enhanced flashcards. It's an effective way to use flashcards. But the core of SRS is in and of itself, it's not much. It has to be attached to something. And in this instance, it's going to be flashcards.
Okay, so I have a list of three pros and cons. We're going to go through them. So number one, a pro, you have a list of every word you're learning in your flashcards.
Mm-hmm.
So, the idea is you come across a word you don't know, you add a flashcard.
Yep.
So you're studying Chinese, you're going to have the characters probably, you're going to have the pinyin, and you're going to have the English. So these intelligent flashcards let you review recognition. So you see the characters and you have to remember the pinyin and the English. Or you could look at the English and try to remember either the pinyin or the characters. So, it keeps everything organized for you. You have it all in your SRS.
Yippee.
Yeah, I think that's especially appealing to certain types of learners, like having this list, this vault, which saves everything that you're learning.
Well, I think it's also like of more interest to Chinese learners than per se if you're learning Spanish or, you know, even Russian, because there's so many, you know, characters in Chinese where you have to learn all these individual characters independently. But, you know, for other languages to have a phonetic alphabet, and you can sound a lot of those out. So you may not be as dependent on flashcards as to Chinese.
Okay, so I think the advantages there are fairly clear, but let me give you a con, all right? The con is you have to make a list of everything you're learning. Yeah. So you have to do it yourself, whether you're importing a word list or you're like using some app that you just click on stuff and it adds them, or whether you're painstakingly compiling a list and adding it to your software. Like, you have to do something to create that list.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where some of the complexity creeps in. Like, one, are you choosing the right words? Because if you're a beginner and you're adding lots of really difficult words, that's going to come back to bite you. The other thing is kind of what I call the DIY factor. And the basic principle is easy come, easy go. If you just download a list of 200 flashcards and it took you 2 seconds, then it's really easy to give up on those because, you know, it's just a download. Who cares? Like, if you don't use it, you don't use it. Whereas if you spend your own beautiful paper flashcards made out of cardboard and acrylic paint or, you know, whatever, then you're actually putting effort into it. And because you put so much effort, it's going to be much more memorable and you're more likely to use them and to stick with them.
A good counterpoint to that, John, and I think these are excellent points you're bringing up, is thankfully, due to the internet, we have like all these word lists and already prepared flashcard decks that can be available on so many different platforms. Anki is one of those. So, I mean, you can get the HSK stuff. And I know for our books too, we have people have made flashcards decks and that you can already download for many different flashcard apps. So that is a good thing, but those may not apply to everybody's situation, which brings it back to your point of that. Yeah, you have to curate and create your own lists.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely convenient. There's no arguing that. But if you're doing more work yourself, then you're going to retain it better. And the other thing, which relates to what I was just saying about having to make your own lists, is knowing what to add is a skill that you need to develop. Mm. Like, if you're a total beginner, you don't really know what words you need to add. Like, it's good to rely on a teacher or some resource telling you what you really need to focus on, or, you know, maybe it's a graded reader. If you're just adding every single word you come across that you don't know, well, that's eventually going to add up to this monster towering pile of words that is going to end up not being very effective. Okay, so number two, the pro is that regular review is all prepared for you. So this is the intelligent part of SRS, the spaced part. So you might have 500 words saved, but it's not going to make you review all 500 words every day. It's going to choose the 10 or the 20 that you really need to review today before you forget them. So those words that you need to review today, those are often called like reps, which words need to be repeated today so that you don't forget them. And that's the part which is intelligently handled by the SRS algorithm.
And, you know, that part, it can be fantastic as well. You know, one of the elements, you know, for learning anything is a concept of that forgetting curve. And so this is something that's well researched and studied. It pretty much shows that, you know, if you'd say there's like decay, half-lives even in our memory of things that we remember, details of different events, and of course of things that we're intentionally learning. And so we do forget, if I recall roughly, it's within a week, we will forget over half of what we have studied just a week previous if it hadn't been reinforced. So this is what that SRS system is trying to, you know, reinforce against and fight against, is that forgetting curve.
Yeah, this is really the genius of the system. This is why everyone loves it so much. Like, you don't have to, you know, look at this giant stack of flashcards and figure out which ones you need to review. It picks the ones for you. So it might be that some of them that you learned recently, you keep forgetting, so you keep seeing those over and over again. And it might be some of them, you know, you learned 2 weeks ago, but you might be forgetting it, so you see that one again. And then be one you learned like a year ago, and you know it really well, but like, just in case, here it is. Oh yeah, I still remember it. Good. So this can be really great, especially if you don't have too many reps, because this is where some people get into trouble. They're adding so many words every day, and the number of reps they need to do every day to stay on top of it, just it starts becoming massive. Like, oh, I have to do 100 flashcards every day or else I get behind and I'll never catch up.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So again, this relates to like using SRS as a skill. Like, if you're just adding constantly nonstop, you better be reviewing a lot, because that is going to add up. It's going to compound. And you are human after all. You're not just saving stuff to the old hard drive.
That's so true. Wish it was that way, John.
So this is actually the con. The regular review is all prepared for you, but it can be a bit of a chore. I know that I myself, when I've gone through stints of using SRS to learn vocabulary, I start to kind of dread it. Some people really love it because they can just kind of feel their memory, you know, hardening in their brain, and they're retaining everything. But you know, there's going to be stuff you're forgetting. You might start to dread it, and if you have to do it every single day, it can actually have a detrimental effect on your attitude towards your studies. Mm-hmm. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, so that's one of those things. So it comes back to our motivation, right? And our, you know, what we call in learning the affect dimension, right? Of where your personal motivation, your interest in doing it. And sometimes if this can lead to people feeling like learning Chinese is a chore.
Right, so it's useful to kind of figure out how you feel about that and to have that as part of your evaluation of SRS as a tool.
I think it's good to just note at this aspect real quick without getting too far off track is that, you know, this is really important. It's okay to change course in how you're learning the language if you're finding something isn't working for you. You know, heck, even if you're enrolled in a class and it's just you enjoyed something else better or something else is working for you, it's okay to stop something and to re-pivot and realign your goals and your motives. So anyway, side note, back to you, John.
Yeah, on that note of it's okay to restart or whatever, I once wrote a blog post about an Anki reset I did because I was using Anki to learn vocabulary, but I made some mistakes in what I was adding, and my reps were becoming a horrible chore. And so we'll give a link to that so that hopefully some of you will avoid that same mistake. Okay, but now on to pro number three. This is the final one. So pro number three is that you never forget anything. SRS keeps it all in there. It kind of has an idea of how well you're remembering the words because of how many times you've told it, no, I don't remember, and yes, I do remember. And it shows you the words before you can forget them, thanks to the old forgetting curve and the algorithm. So what a pro, right?
Wow.
You never forget anything.
Never forget, John. Never forget, John. Never forget.
Yeah, I know that some people actually see SRS, like their flashcard deck or decks, as almost an extension of their memory. So they got what's in their head, but they also have what's in their decks. And there's kind of like this fluid exchange of information between the two. And it's all keeping the vocabulary that they've saved kind of like semi-accessible in various states.
Yeah, it can be very helpful to do that.
Okay, now here's where the con comes in. The con is that it doesn't let you forget anything. So if there are words that maybe you're like, oh yeah, I should learn that word, that could maybe possibly be useful someday. And then you start adding those words, then like every day Anki's going to be like, do you remember this? Do you remember this? Do you remember this? And when you keep saying no, it just keeps showing you the next day. And it's really annoying. And you might have various levels of that, like some words that you forget every 2 days or every 3 days, and they just keep coming back. These are known among SRS fans as leeches, and it's possible to just delete them and ban them. But there's always like those borderline words. It's like, oh, do I need this word? I keep forgetting it. I've never, ever used it.
Mm-hmm.
I've never come across it in my reading, but it seems like it should be useful. Do I keep reviewing it as painful as it is, or do I delete it? So this like never letting you forget anything can be kind of a nuisance in your studies.
There's also a small insidious aspect of that, John, too, where I'm sure you've come across this, of where sometimes you get stuck on a certain meaning or translation of a word. And sometimes, as we know, things don't directly translate over to English or whatever our native language is. And so you may continually be looking at that flashcard and you see the definition and you're kind of like, oh, it means this, but maybe it's a little off. Or there obviously are many meanings of a character. Like in English, the word go, I think, has something like like 50 or more definitions in the dictionary. And we can still come across things like that in Chinese, where we continually reinforce maybe an understanding of a character or a word which may not be totally in line with how we're encountering it out in the wild.
Yeah, and so you can add like different meanings of the same words. A lot of times you won't, though. And that's just something you have to deal with, whether you're using flashcards or not. But flashcards can definitely reinforce like a certain maybe non-representative view of words. In fact, that's one of the things about it not letting you forget is that sometimes it's better to forget. Like someone tells you a word and you're like, oh, I better remember that. But actually, it's not useful or it's not even right. And it's okay to forget it. Like, we forget stuff all the time. Like, what about all these movies where people, you know, sci-fi movies where people can't forget and we learn that sometimes forgetting is better? I think the same is true for language learning. Like, not all words are equally valuable. Like, SRS kind of treats every word as equally valuable, but they're not really.
Yeah, that's a really good point, John.
Okay, so those are the pros and cons. But I want to go a little bit more into, like, how do you make use of that information to figure out how useful it is for you? And I want to make a little observation here. I've worked with hundreds of clients, and most of them, if they don't use flashcards and SRS, we've at least talked about it. And what I've discovered is that SRS flashcards really appeal to programmer developer types, very logical, methodical people, like scientist types, people that really value the efficiency of the algorithm. Like, for these people, flashcards using SRS is a total revelation, and it can change everything about the way they study.
Yeah, John, this is I think, really important aspect to hit on here. And, you know, one of the things about language learning is that sometimes we want to approach it from an aspect of a discrete data set as opposed to something continuous. Now, for anyone who doesn't speak statistics, the idea behind a discrete data set is something where, just think of it, something like had whole numbers. So there's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That would be a data set which is discrete. It's clear, it's defined, every number is whole. And so you can clearly see how much data is in there. Something that's continuous would be something that would incorporate every aspect of a decimal in between every number. So we could say the continuous data set would be from 1 to 10, but, you know, there's 1.1, but there's also 1.1376521, whatever, right? And so you get the idea. So it's continuous. And so there's almost infinite, numbers within the data set, within a continuous data set between 1 and 10. Chinese is like that. Any language is like that. Where sometimes we want to approach it like a discrete data set where, oh, I just need to learn these words. And in Chinese, I need to learn all these characters. But that's not how we use the language. It's continuous, where it can be infinite permutations. And the conversation that John and I are having right now on this podcast is probably never existed in the exact order, you know, and word combination that you're listening to it, because, you know, there's infinite ways to say what we're saying, although the words that we're saying have all been said before. So I think that's one aspect.
Okay, but to play devil's advocate, even though language is like infinitely flexible, and, you know, I hear what you're saying, characters themselves are discrete.
Mm-hmm.
And learning to recognize characters is something that you have to do. And so if you're constantly confusing, you know, qi and jiu, these two numbers, then practicing it more until you really get it down will help. So that's one aspect of language learning, you know, character recognition, where SRS can definitely help. But it is not a language mastery method. It's to help you remember certain things.
You know, John, I think that's one of the allures that Chinese can have, is that some people approach it and they'll say, oh, if I learn 3,000 characters or 5,000 characters, then I've mastered the language, which comes back to the concept of having a discrete versus a continuous data set. So yes, it's discrete that we have 3,000 characters. Well, there's obviously more than that, but just for argument's sake, 3,000 characters you need to learn to be fluent in the language, but learning those alone does not mean you are going to be fluent in the language.
And what fans of SRS will tell you is that, well, yeah, I know that, but the point is, if I can recognize the characters, then I at least can start to read. Whereas if I can't recognize anything, then, you know, game over, right? It's a non-starter.
So, you know, bringing this back to, actually, I'm going to reference this initial topic that was brought up by Paul. It kind of came up from a discussion that was about, hey, should I use flashcards and SRS to learn Chinese, or should I do extensive reading? And, you know, overall, my answer behind that is yes. It's not an either or question in my mind. You know, they're two sides of the same coin. And and really, here's a good example. I actually, John, I have something here from Rob Warren. He's one of the leading academics in extensive reading. He's based out of Japan. He's been doing his studying his whole academic life about extensive reading, and he said cites two studies, okay, regarding flashcards. And one specific study found that by using flashcards, it found that students were able to learn words 16 times faster. Okay, and this is per hour of study, and they also retain words longer when compared to extensive reading. And there was another study that also said this similar thing. He's like, well, you could easily conclude that, you know, we shouldn't ask learners to learn vocabulary from extensive reading, but try to, you know, do flashcards. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. But he goes on to say that doing that would be a grave mistake and a fundamentally flawed conclusion, because language learning, it's just far more complex than the extremely simplistic picture as we're illustrated there. So it doesn't take into consideration all the ways it can be used, the word pairs, you know, all the set phrases. In Chinese, we have chenyu, we have, verbal phrases. We have all sorts of different ways that the language is used and infinite combinations. And how are you going to learn those things? You're not going to learn them all from like flashcards. You have to get out there and use it. And one of the best ways to do that is having comprehensible input, and extensive reading is one of the best ways to get that. So I think kind of bringing it full circle here.
And I think it's worth noting that you can learn and become fluent and literate in Chinese without using flashcards or SRS of any kind. You can. People have been doing it for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot become fluent and literate by just reviewing flashcards.
Amen.
Especially if it's just words. Some people will tell you that doing sentence flashcards will help get you there. But I think there comes a point when the system just gets so complex that maybe you should just read.
And sentence flashcards, you know, I think those are an excellent thing. And you know, they're great. There's all sorts of ways to scaffold your way up and bridge your way into just more like natural conversation and higher level reading materials. And so flashcards is a great way to level up those characters. And then getting out there and speaking or reading is an excellent way to consolidate that learning. So it's this concept that we always bring up, John, of, you know, that knowledge versus proficiency. Flashcards is going to build your knowledge, but probably not your proficiency very well. So build up your knowledge and then get out there and practice what you've learned and deepen that knowledge and what you've been studying. And there, that's one of the simple keys right there to, as we would say, the F word, fluency.
Yeah, and flashcards are definitely an efficient way to do it. I don't think there's any argument there. If you do them, you know, you focus on it, it's going to work. It's going to be efficient. You don't have to, but you'll probably get there faster if you use them. The only thing is, if you do it too much or if you absolutely hate it, you could kill your motivation. So you got to have a little bit of self-awareness here. Like, do you really love this or do you dread it? Or maybe you just want to do it for a while, get the benefits, and then kind of hold off.
So have some pity on your motivation, folks. Treat it kindly. Don't choke it to death and watch its life drain from its eyes. Nurture it. Let it grow into something beautiful. So do that, guys. So just do that.
Okay, so to kind of wrap up, let's take a look at maybe the ideal situation for using SRS to help you kind of understand if it's going to be useful for you, and maybe some of the times when you maybe shouldn't use it. So I mentioned before there's a certain personality type that seems to like it, but let's look at some situations. So for example, Jared, you mentioned using SRS in conjunction with graded readers.
Yeah.
So maybe you're reading a story, like you keep coming across this word and you're like, oh, what is that word? I keep forgetting. And you have to keep looking at the footnotes and it's not there because you came across it before. So you have to turn to the back of the book and keep checking it. Okay, those words, which are going to keep showing up in the story, would be good in a flashcard deck.
Noted.
Okay, another similar example would be if you're like you're studying for the HSK, you want to pass the HSK 3, you have a word list, you're doing the practice tests, those words in the word list keep showing up. This is a no-brainer. Use SRS, it's going to help you.
Absolutely. Again, noted.
All right, another one, maybe you're like you're working on reading the news and you're reading a news story every day and you notice that some words keep showing up and you keep forgetting them and you have to keep looking them up. Those words could go in an SRS flashcard deck.
Newsworthily noted.
All right, and finally, suppose you're doing your university studies or graduate studies in China on a specific field. So rather than adding lots of random words, you're adding words related to your field, you know, physics or classical Chinese or whatever it is. And so you know you're going to see those again in your studies, and you keep forgetting them, so you add them to an SRS deck. You don't forget it. Bam.
Newbly noted.
All right. Now, to help the non-believers that don't want to use SRS, there are some situations where it's not a good idea. So, for example, you have no idea what to learn. You're just randomly looking at stuff and adding words to a deck, or you're randomly downloading flashcard decks and then studying them. Okay, this probably isn't going to work too well.
Mm-mm. I highly advise against doing that, too.
Another example would be like, oh, I want to read this this new book, Santi. It's probably way above my level, but I'll just add every word I don't know to an SRS flashcard deck, and that couldn't possibly go wrong, right? All right, that's not a...
No, three-body problem, Santi, that contains advanced astrophysical concepts in Chinese. How could that go wrong, John? I can't.
No, it's not the topic, because actually having it focused on a topic can help you. The problem is that you have no idea how common these words are if you're going to see them again. Like, it's above your head, and just adding it all into a flashcard deck is not really the solution. I've done this before, so I know it can be very bad.
John, try telling me that I'm not going to be using the concept of gravitational pull in everyday conversation.
I will not tell you that. You can go and experiment on your own, Mr. Science. Okay, so hopefully that was helpful. Remember, reading is the original SRS, but if you want to use flashcards that are enhanced by SRS, it can make your studies much more efficient.
Oh, yeah. Get out there and, well, just do something at least. Start studying, guys. Okay, now it's time for a word from our sponsor. And today our sponsor is...
Mandarin Companion, specifically... Jekyll and Hyde.
That's right. We just released this book, and it is off to great reviews. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback on the story. It's the new Level 2 Mandarin Companion Graded Reader based on 450 basic characters. And it is a new twist on the classic novel of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
No, it's not. There's not a twist. Just read it.
We twist inside of a twist. Wrapped up in a twist.
Yeah.
Ensconced in a twist.
Anyway, it's not exactly the same story that you've read before. I think that's safe to say, besides just being a Chinese context.
That's right. So go out there and get it today. You can find it on Amazon, iBooks, or Kobo, or wherever you get your books, probably.
All right, it's a good one, and let us know what you think.
Jekyll and Hyde, Mandarin Companion Level 2, 450-character level book. All right, now it's time for Rants and Raves. John, what do you got for us today? You got a rant, or do you have a rave?
Thought I'd mix things up a little this week. I have a rant.
Ooh.
I am going to be, I know this is going to surprise you, Jared, I'm going to be a little grumpy right now. You ready?
What? John, not you. No.
Here it comes. All right, so this is a rant. Right. It's specifically targeted at a habit, like something that can mess up your studies.
Like picking your nose?
Not that one. It is over-organizing your studies instead of studying.
Hmm.
And I think this is something that SRS goes well with, so it's what made me think of it. Like, you save your vocabulary in Pleco, and it goes into this uncategorized saved word category. And, oh, that won't do. I need categories for all of my saved words. You know, and you start spending hours just, like, getting your vocabulary into these categories, and then you realize that those categories aren't good enough, and you have to redo them. You know, stuff like that. You're not actually studying. You kind of tell yourself you are, but you're not really learning Chinese. It's bad.
Yeah, quite true.
And then the Anki version of that would be to have like lots of different decks, like deck for this and deck for that, and like when you study that deck and how often you review this deck and how the decks have different settings. Like, so yeah, that is not necessarily helping you learn Chinese either. Could be, but not necessarily.
This is something I talked about in depth with James Loach in episode number 45. He spent so much time, you know, researching ways to optimally learn Chinese. And ultimately, one of his conclusions is that, you can go look through all these best ways to learn it, but you've got to actually learn it. So keep it in the work, right?
Yeah, so, you know, a little organization is good, but obsessing over it probably not helping you too much.
Duly noted, John.
I'm gonna want to see these notes after this episode, Jared. You've noted a lot here. Okay, do you have a rant or a rave, Jared?
All right, John, I have a rave today. Oh, yes, I have something good. And I came across this. It is a website I'm going to recommend to you. Okay, but before I tell you what this is, occasionally we have people who have written us questions or have made comments on various different forums or sent us messages saying, hey, you know, where can I find movies or shows in Chinese? So I am happy to tell you, and you may know that there are shows on like Netflix, and I'm specifically going to talk about Netflix here, that are in Chinese or have like a Chinese translation or they're dubbed in Chinese. So I found a website that has a listing of all the shows that are available on Netflix that have Chinese tracks to them. Now, it even goes a little more detail because I know many of our listeners are not in the United States. You can actually put in like what country you're in and you can search for like shows that have a Chinese track to it. And boom, it'll show you everything. You can do by genre. You can search different types of things. And the website's called, it's younogs.com. So, but the U, it's the letter U, like UNOGS.com. So it's almost like Uno GS, Uno Dos Tres. So you can go out there, you can check out younogs.com. It's a great site. If you want to start finding shows and movies that have Chinese tracks to them on Netflix, it is a great resource. So you can find stuff to listen and watch in Chinese.
All right, cool.
And John, guess what I found? I found a cartoon series. It's the Dr. Seuss series of Green Eggs and Ham. Evidently, they did a cartoon series of it. It's in Chinese. I started watching it. It was kind of cute.
I got to say, though, the Chinese version of Green Eggs and Ham does not have the same charm as the English version.
I agree. But it actually, it's not like, it's not the book. It takes the characters from the book, and they've created a whole cartoon series. Okay. So it's kind of fun.
All right, cool. Yeah. So, Jared, we got an interview today, right?
Oh, we do, and let's get right to it.
All right.
Well, my name's Luke Neal.
Luke is the real deal when it comes to learning Chinese. In fact, he's made a career out of it.
Well, I started Mandarin Blueprint with my good friend Phil. That's been our full-time job for the last 5 years. It's the reason we get up in the morning.
I've always said, for some people, you can leave China, but China never leaves you. For Luke, this is entirely true.
I think we're making great strides towards making Chinese easy and fun.
His story will surely inspire you. Stay with us. Why did you start learning Chinese?
When I was about 13, I started doing Chinese martial arts, and it was just the next 5 years, 13 to 18 or so, just Bruce Lee, Jet Li, Jackie Chan. I wanted to be a Shaolin monk, you know, practicing like Wing Chun, Shaolin Kung Fu and stuff, doing the splits, swinging a staff around my back garden every day, nunchucks, everything.
Serious bow staff skills.
And I even went as far as like painting terrible Chinese characters on my wall. I remember the five elements for some reason.
Really?
Wind, fire, etc.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I painstakingly painted Bruce Lee on my wall.
Wow.
Like hand-painted a quote and stuff like this. Pretty nerdy. That was my obsession anyway, like throughout my teens. And typical of British style, usually you just go away on a boozing holiday, you know, pretend you're seeing culture, but really you just go get wasted for a year. But I did not do that. I went and decided to save up all my money for about 10 months and then spent the last 2 months in China by myself. So, which was a pretty big leap for me at the time. But in order to prepare for that, I used Pimsleur, one of those audio listen and repeat programs. I don't know if you've experienced that before.
We've had a couple guests on the show who, that's how they started learning Chinese, was Pimsleur.
I got to say, whenever any of our members bring up Pimsleur, I'm always speaking very highly of it because it worked for me personally, you know. But I'm that kind of person that I'm happy to just repeat and repeat and repeat. As long as I think it's going to work and I'm interested in it, I'll just do the same monotonous thing over and over again. But anyway, I did that for like 90 hours. Like the whole program is like 90 hours. And I did the whole thing before I left. Didn't learn to read pinyin or anything like that. I think I got the basics of it. But just listen, repeat. And I think that did wonders for my pronunciation early on. But I went to China and I just remember being able to have conversations with people. And wow. It was just the most incredible experience.
You know, that's a great story, because the bottom line is, I always say, is that there's a lot of ways to learn a language and they all can work, right? It's just some are much more effective than others. And frankly, I think if you put in 90 hours into any one of those programs, you're going to get some results. And it sounds like it worked out for you.
Yeah, I mean, I could sit here and break down what's wrong with PIMSA, don't get me wrong. but it worked wonders at the time. And when I was actually in China, the warmth and response I got from speaking Chinese with accurate pronunciation, even though I couldn't speak a lot, but I could read basic pinyin, I could point to stuff and I could pronounce accurately. I felt like I had this superpower, because pretty much zero other foreigners spoke any Chinese, anyone that I met anyway. I just sort of became the tour guide somehow. Like, I became the translator when I had a vocabulary of like 200 words or 100 words. So it was just a fantastic experience.
Well, real quick, Luke, though, like, where did you go during that 2 months in China and what were you doing?
Oh, right. That was just a mess. I had saved up all this money from a job that I hated, and I was just like, I'm just going to blow all this money. So I didn't plan my itinerary at all. This was my personality. I'm not that side of the brain. I just sort of went, I want to go here. I like chatted to a guy and I'd like fly across. I started out in Hong Kong. I gave away my tour guide at the end, so I lost my map. I drew a map of where I went, and it was just like a child's scribble, just going over the map of China. I think I flew to like Shanghai, and then I took a train to Xi'an, and then I went up to Beijing. It was just a mess, but it was a fun mess. And I went to see as many main sites as you could. Went to like the Great Wall of China. Went to like an out of the way part of it. I actually met Josh Hartnett on the Great Wall of China randomly.
Wow!
And went on a cruise down the Li River. You know, everything was random. You know, I'd read, I can't remember the guy's name now, but he's a very famous travel writer. And he was all about just go with the flow. Bit of Tim Ferriss in there as well. And I was like, okay, I'm going to just do what I feel. I just take a plane to a place, not knowing really anything about it. And I was like, okay, I'm at the airport. Don't know what to do. I'll book a cruise. And it was like this really cheap cruise. But because it was a really cheap cruise, it was like I met some really interesting, like real sort of working class Chinese people. I just hung around with like this 10-year-old girl, a 14-year-old boy who's just like trying to practice English, and this girl's like younger brother or something. I was like just hanging out with a bunch of kids for like 3 days, like just practicing Chinese.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I had like a cute, because again, it's like the more working class Chinese people generally, especially back then, it was like 10 years ago now. Like they just haven't seen a foreigner before. So I had like a queue of people on this boat, on this cruise, just like queuing up to talk to me, like on a daily basis. I was so tired at the end of every day, but my language skills were increasing at a rapid rate.
You know, somewhere out in China, there's like these pictures circulating around with you. They're like maybe printed off on someone's, you know, like in their house. Like, who's that guy? Some foreigner we met on a cruise, right? Well, I mean, that sounds like it was quite an adventure for you. Obviously, you were only there for 2 months, but you're back in China now. So how did that spur you on?
As soon as I got back to England, literally, I think it was 3 days later, that was my first day of university. Something was telling me, just don't go, just stay in China, just go back to China. It just felt so good being there. But I was like, no, you got to get a degree, because apparently that's what everyone has to do. So I went and did my degree. I tried to join a Chinese class, but it was the most hilariously bad experience. It was a very nice Chinese woman sitting there, and it was us in a circle, and she would go something simple like, 你叫什么名字? And then she'd look to the left, and then the person would have to say, what? 你叫什么名字? And then literally 12 people were in a circle, and then she'd go, good. 你几岁? And then it would just go around. Like, it's just basically like a really slow, even more boring version of PIMSLA.
Oh, man.
And then I was just like, oh, whatever. I'll just do my marketing degree for 3 years and then a year of working in a call center trying to figure out. And then after a year, I was like, it was like I'd been asleep, which university often does to you, especially in England. Again, the drinking culture and all this sort of stuff. You forget what you're there for. It's kind of a distraction in a way. And so after I worked for a year and I suddenly woke up, I was like, what am I doing? I went back to sort of my 19-year-old self. So I basically did the same thing again. I saved up as quickly as I could, a few months, and then I just left. I just quit and I just left. I was like, okay, I've got to get back on track. As soon as I came back to China, I started off in Chengdu, which was the place that I liked the most whilst I was there when I was 19. I actually met my now wife on that day, like the first day.
Wow. What?
Yeah. Yeah.
How did that happen? I got to hear the story.
Well, it's not really much of a story. She worked in the bar at the hostel, and we got to know each other and became great friends.
And now you got a kid.
And now we've got a kid, and now we're married. She was my first Chinese teacher as well, and she wasn't the best. You know, it was just a way of her to spend more time with me. She tried to teach me a Tang Dynasty poems using this textbook on my, like, my first lesson.
Oh my.
Which was very interesting, but not ideal. But yeah, that's how I ended up back in China, and then I've been here ever since.
One thing I do know about you, Luke, is that you've achieved a good proficiency in Chinese. So obviously being in China helps, but I mean, you and I, we both know guys who have been in, you know, China for a long time and speak, you know, little to perhaps no Chinese. I mean, what were you doing at that stage and to really like up your Chinese game and kind of what took you to the path of where you are now?
Oh, first of all, I'd like to just say that I appreciate using the term like good proficiency instead of that slippery word fluency. You're fluent in Chinese.
Oh, yes. It's, like it's the F word, right? So what did you do to kind of really up your game to increase your proficiency to kind of where it is now?
It sort of starts off quite bad because my first year, maybe a year and a half, you know, when everyone starts learning Chinese, you have that like love affair with the language. Even if your methods kind of suck, you're just so interested. Like that Tang Dynasty poem, I was fascinated by. That wasn't helping my Chinese whatsoever. But I spent the first year or so really spending hours every day, hours and hours, using methods that didn't really work. And it wasn't necessarily because the methods were bad. Like I used websites like memrise.com. Mm-hmm. I did use ChinesePod, which was just my favorite. And it's one of my favorites to this day. But I didn't have a plan. I didn't know how languages were acquired. I wasn't putting my focus in the right area. I just basically ended up learning 5,000 words, you know, the HSK 1 to 6. I put learning in air quotes there because it's like I could regurgitate a definition of each word and vice versa. I couldn't write anything. I couldn't use it in context. I hadn't seen them in context. The idea of reading sentences and listening to stuff habitually, like I would listen to pop-up Chinese as well, which I'm a big fan of. Again, still recommend that as well to people. Mm-hmm. But it was just bits and pieces here and there. I'd spend like 5 hours one day just like obsessively going through Chinese pod like lessons, and then that's it. I wouldn't do anything with the information. I would then forget it a month later, and I just jump around to all these different things. But when things started to turn around was when I actually looked into how languages are acquired. Mm. Namely, second language acquisition research by Stephen Krashen. The first big turnaround was I found the idea of learning characters using memory palaces. Mm-hmm. That was a big game changer. I learned 3,000 characters in 6 months. And then I started to understand the importance of looking at sentences and using flashcards, namely Anki. So that was like the big turnaround. And once I started reading sentences, that was when I started becoming more fluent. And that was the first big sort of step towards that.
So what about that with Stephen Krashen? I mean, for our listeners, just so you know, Stephen Krashen, he's probably one of the most influential guys in second language acquisition, you know, the comprehensible input hypothesis, right? Mm. That we learn best at our level plus one. Mm. But what was that about that, you know, really impacted you, and how did that change how you were approaching the language?
Well, it's just the idea of immersion. But immersion with content that you can understand. That's the key thing. You probably remember a lot of textbooks aren't really structured that way. Most textbooks are kind of like, there's 20 new words. Now immediately read this script. By the way, we're not going to teach you characters. Just try and recognize the squiggles. And that does work for Chinese people, but it takes 10 years of like misery. But generally, it was read and listen to content you can understand. That was the key thing. Now, the I plus one thing, that's also a thing that works, I suppose.
The debate is always what constitutes plus one, right?
Exactly. The Mandarin Blueprint, we're now more about 98% comprehension. Everything we show you, we're going to aim for 98%. So you understand 98% of what you're reading and listening to.
I have to validate that for you guys real quick, Luke, because like, you know, the Extensive Reading Foundation, you know, it's a consortium of academics that Extensive Reading is based on Krashen's input hypothesis, that their research suggests, again, that we learn best at 98% comprehension. That's actually really great to hear. You guys are finding that out because that's what all the academics have coalesced around as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I would follow people like Steve Kaufman and Link. Again, I promote Link whenever I can for free.
We actually did have Steve Kaufman on the podcast, episode 14, I believe.
And also one more thing, All Japanese All the Time. That was a huge one for me too. He helped me a lot with the idea of listening immersion. I believe he was Kenyan. He learned Japanese from zero to like, let's say, good proficiency enough to get a job in Japan.
That's pretty good.
He did that in like 18 months, purely through listening, like 18 hours, sometimes 24 hours a day. And so Phil and I, we were friends, like studying together. We'd often share tips and ideas for improving our Chinese with each other. And that's something that we both did. We both went on like a listening kick for about 6 months. Just, we could listen to Luoji Siwei, which, to be honest, that was like plus five at the time for me. But like, I understood enough to get the gist. Listening to things like Gou Xiong, Yu Hua Shuo, this guy, Bear Talk, it's a good podcast. Mm-hmm. Again, Link was great. It was very helpful. Chinese Pod. I just stick stuff on shuffle in my ears whenever I could. And after 6 months of doing that, I just noticed such a stark improvement in how I could communicate in Chinese.
Wow, that's impressive. So can you think about any stories or any periods where you kind of felt like you had a real breakthrough moments or something where you're like, oh, wow, this is really clicking?
I guess the first time I started reviewing sentence flashcards in Anki. Bear in mind, this is the point where maybe a year and a half of sort of spending a lot of time and just having all of these thousands of words floating around in my head, not really knowing how to use them. So I used to work at a university in China, just going on the bus and having 100 sort of flashcard reviews built up of these sentences and being able to read them and understand them out loud for the first time. I can shadow these. I can read them. I know what's being said. And previous to that, all I had done, I can regurgitate this individual character's definition, or I can regurgitate this individual word's definition. But after about a few days or even just a week of reviewing these cards, something happened where it was all starting to click into place with grammar and things like that. And I was like, oh, grammar is not learned by doing what I actually did, which I didn't tell you yet. I went to All Set Learning, the grammar wiki. Massive props to that, a great resource, but I was using it in such a terrible way by literally just going through grammar point by grammar point. It's actually, I'm genuinely like laughing just thinking about it, like thinking this is going to work. I went through like A1, A2, B1, B, like went through all of the grammar points on that site, which is hundreds. And I just wrote notes, like wrote the grammar point out, like copied it out.
Oh, man.
And thinking that was going to solve my issue. Like that was going to teach me grammar, you know, just writing out grammar points and looking at the example sentences and that's it. And then move on, right? That's grammar point is now mastered. I took so much time.
Sometimes, especially early on, we think that, right? But I mean, you and I know it's like grammar. It's not like you don't learn grammar by studying it. You learn grammar by seeing it again and again. And sometimes you go and check those references for clarification, right?
Exactly. Yeah. After a few weeks of reading sentence flashcards and a few months of listening to stuff that I could understand, I remember another key moment was, this was just before I started Mandarin Blueprint with Phil, actually. I was just kind of in a funk, still teaching English, not really knowing what I'm doing. And I remember coming down with a student of mine just from where I was teaching her and just having a chat. Because that was the last lesson together and she wanted to have a chat and just see me off and stuff. And so we had a chat and I remember just having such a, let's say, fluent conversation because I'm very neurotic, just part of my personality, very self-critical. And, you know, that can often affect the way I speak in certain environments, speak Chinese. But with her, like at that particular moment in time, I just dropped all that nonsense. I was just completely just having a meaningful conversation really for the first time in Chinese. And I just remember I just had a conversation like I would in English.
Wow.
For the first time. And I just walked out of that restaurant just thinking, wow, I wish I could do that every time.
Wow. It was just,
hard work has finally paid off, you know?
Wow, that's a fantastic feeling. That's so cool. Luke, something I wanted to just touch on a little bit. You mentioned about, you know, like sentence flashcards, and I can intuitively get the meaning by that. Maybe you talk a little bit about that and what exactly that is.
Yeah, so it's kind of a couple of different activities. One is sentence mining. So where do you find the sentences? And that's kind of what we based Mandarin Blueprint around. All you need to know to learn a word, you need to see it in context. You don't necessarily need 10 sentences to learn one word. As long as you have a good sentence with good context and good comprehension, those two factors are very important, then you can just learn that word or that specific usage of that specific word forever. That's all you need. I remember having a chat with Gabriel Weiner, the Fluent Forever creator. He sort of confirmed this for me. All you need is sentences. And of course, if you go for like longer form content, that's fantastic too, because that creates more emotional connection to your content. But, you know, it's not 100% necessary. So you will need to find a place or several places to search for sentences. Our course provides them for you based on what you already know. If I was going to recommend another resource, I think Chinese Pod actually genuinely is a very good one. Graded readers, it could be you're reading a book and you highlight it and you copy it and paste it into your flashcards, whatever it is. So Mandarin Companion is also fantastic because it's that longer form content and you can copy and paste, right? Because they're digital now, aren't they?
Ebooks or print books, you could even just, you know, type it in.
Find a sentence for a word that you want to learn. It's ideal if you can search. So I really like bing.cn/dict. Funnily enough, Bing has one of my favorite dictionaries.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You search for a word and you can actually grade it by ease and like whether it's oral or written. You find a good sentence where you understand almost everything. Like say I plus one, mm-hmm. and it has enough context. So it can't be like, if you want to learn the word pinguo, apple, it's not like I like pinguos. It's like, what's you want pinguos? That's not good enough. It has to be long enough where you couldn't just replace that word with anything. Mm-hmm. For example, Isaac Newton was sitting under a tree and a something fell on his head. But you find a sentence with good context that you understand most of, and you copy that into your flashcards and you create what they call a closed delete, where you'd highlight in Anki a single character. So you want to learn a two-character word, I highly recommend you highlight the characters separately, delete them separately, maybe underline the word in its entirety as well. Mm. Maybe add an image if you really want to, and just start reviewing it.
It's kind of like a closed test.
I still use it to this day. I still do it, but just not as much. As you get more advanced, it's much better to focus on full content, like long-form content, like graded readers like you guys, wonderful books. Or like another one I really like is Dual Chinese, Decipher, you know, The Chairman's Bow, these guys. Mm-hmm. Just find stuff like that. But this individual sentence mining and sentence card creation is a great stepping stone for when you're a beginner, sort of trying to graduate into just listening and reading in general.
So what kind of happened where you decided, hey, let's start this Mandarin Blueprint? And you know, what's special about what you guys do?
When I was having all these breakthroughs, because I was actually looking into how languages were learned, I also joined university. I joined Phil, actually. I was in his class for university for just a semester before I dropped out. I couldn't handle it. But whilst I was there, I met so many other learners, all having the exact same problem, but just a bit more passive. They weren't actively trying to solve the problem like me and Phil were. And I just remembered like thinking, these smart people who really want to learn this language, like most of them, and they care about the culture and they can't. And they also feel dumb. They feel like they're bad at languages, like I did before I figured it out. But they're stuck there, and they may be stuck there for life as well. And that's terrible. I remember I put out an advert on Go Chengdu, which is like the local site, sort of like Chengdu Living. I just put an advert out to people saying, hey, for 300 RMB an hour, I will teach you the best way to learn Chinese and all this sort of stuff based on the research that I've done. And I got zero responses. I remember telling Phil about it. Phil was like my go-to guy, like, because we were study buddies and, you know, good friends as well. And I'd go to him, but like, what do you reckon? Why isn't this working? And he goes, I don't know, maybe lower the price. I don't know. Well, you know, he wasn't really interested at the time. But then I went and thought, oh, do you know what? I'll make an online course. And I spent about three months or something just like planning it. It's like, keep going back to Phil. Like, what do you reckon, Phil, to this video? And he's like, great. Like, you didn't have the heart to tell me it was terrible. And so the idea was just, I just want to tell people the basics. Like, basically, first of all, listen and read, learn characters. Here's a cool character learning method that I found. And here's how to learn words. Here's flashcards. You know, I want to just like teach people it. And then the end of it, Phil was like, I don't know, he's getting sick of me just like constantly coming up to him with like these ideas and not sort of executing them. He said, why don't we just do it together? Let's get a group of people in Chengdu, like charge them like a few bucks an hour. And we'll sit there and we'll just make a short course or something. And that's how it started. My boss at the time let us use a spare classroom and we had four people. We just developed it from there.
Wow.
The philosophy behind it is just that there are these great things out there. There's Mandarin Companion, there's Chinese Pod, there's Memrise. Now, Memrise is good as well. It has its place. Mm-hmm. And Pimsa, there's all these great things out there. There's even Chinese teachers. You know, they can even be good. And textbooks sometimes, possibly. But it's all about how you use them. It's all about your strategy, your plan. Do you have an idea about how languages are acquired? It's also about the order as well, you know. So there's all these different factors that people don't know. And that's because we're raised through school. School teaches us how to learn language incorrectly, I believe.
I agree with that. You know, one of the most common things is that people take, we call L1, you know, first language methods, and apply them to L2 or second language, you know, learning. And yeah, it's different, right? Learning a native language versus learning a second language.
Yeah. At the same time, they treat it as too differently. You know what I mean? We can't learn a second language exactly how we learn our first. But I think the general idea is similar. You know, you listen first, you start babbling, then you start speaking after enough input. Of course, you can't read when you're that age, but that's the advantage that adults have. We can actually read as well. So read and listen, read and listen.
Wow. Luke, something I want to hear from you is, like, you know, if you could go back and do it over and do it differently, what would you do differently?
Well, I mean, I'd just say go and learn 3,000 characters now. Go. Learn 3,000 characters, most common characters, as soon as you can. Learn how to read and start listening now. So basically, it would be read and listen. But of course, with Chinese, Chinese has that unique challenge of characters. You can't just go and read like you would with, say, Spanish or French after a couple of pronunciation lessons and spelling lessons. But generally, it would be find a way to learn those characters and start reading. And also with listening, you know, listening is such a long-term one. I wish I'd have started that from day one, like regular listening immersion. You know, not everyone has like 4 or 5 hours a day like I did when I started. But if you have half an hour a day, you can put it on in the background without causing arguments with your wife. Do it. Do it as much as you can from day one. Even if you don't fully understand what you're listening to, just to gather the sounds and stuff. Because listening takes the longest, but it is also the easiest. It's the most simple. You just put the stuff in your ear and then your brain just absorbs it, but it just takes time, you know? So I guess that's what I would say.
Good advice from a man who knows. Luke, what I want to hear from your perspective is, how has learning Chinese enriched your life?
Throughout my school years, I wasn't ever really good at anything. And it wasn't because I wasn't capable of being good at anything. It was just because I didn't really care. I guess the only subjects that did interest me were French, English, and art. And, you know, most of the teachers for those classes managed to beat that interest out of me. So when I'd left school, like a couple of my teachers just went, you know, Luke, you could have done a lot better than you did. You know, you're a bright lad, but you just didn't. And I was like, yeah, I just never cared, you know. And it was just the way school was set up, I suppose. But with Chinese, it was really the first thing, aside from martial arts, that I actually really invested myself in. So in terms of, like, intrinsically for me, learning Chinese is my first sort of truly rewarding learning endeavor, I suppose, you know, and just made me feel like I am pretty nungan. I can do this, you know, I can learn maybe other skills. It also led to other positive changes in my life, of course. I mean, I'm married to a Chinese woman, you know, a baby with her. I have a great relationship with her family. And some of the things that Chinese allowed me to do, you know, just connecting with certain people, this culture is awesome. You know, it's very different, sometimes quite shockingly so. Going to a village in China and able to experience a real Chinese New Year, that was absolutely incredible. Just connecting with people, basically. And do you know that feeling when you're a kid and you watch a Pixar movie, or that feeling of Christmas? Yeah. Like, reading Chinese does still give me that, like, to a much smaller degree, you know, but like it gives me that feeling a little bit. And like, I understand this. It's still today. I don't know why. Maybe that's just me. I don't know if you feel the same way, but
yeah,
like,
it's like it opens up a new world, you know, that you just couldn't access in any other way.
Oh.
All right, Luke, if people want to find out more about you and find out, you know, Mandarin Blueprint, where can they go?
MandarinBlueprint.com. That's where you go. And we have a podcast as well. You can find that via the website. Speaking of, if you want to start a 14-day free trial, you can access that 14 days, just phase one, which is basically our entire character learning method and our pronunciation course as well for free. So
fantastic. Well, we refer guys over to you all the time, especially if they're serious learners. I'm like,
same here.
Get over on Mandarin Blueprint. If you really want to get serious with learning Chinese, it's a great place to go. Well, Luke, thanks so much for being on the show, and we really appreciate your time.
Oh, it's great to be here. Send my love to John. I'm actually a huge fan of him.
We'll chalk you up as one of the John fanboys. I can't blame you. I'm one of them as well.
Awesome.
You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. Help us spread the word by sharing this with your friends, classmates, teachers, cousins, niece, snowman builder, Oreo eater, sunrise watcher, snow shoveler, painter, scoutmaster, and that one guy named Herman. You can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And please write us a review so we know how we're doing. You can find us at Facebook at mannercompania.com and supchina.com. Apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is Kaiser Kuo at SupChina and James Harper with Filter Productions. And I'd like to thank our guest, Luke Neal, and of course, thanks to my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Passon. See you next time.